up to you and me to shine a guiding light and lead the way. United by our cause, we have the power to pursue what we believe. We'll achieve the realization of our dreams.
Hello, Vaughan Bennison with this edition of New Horizons. In this week's program, we hear the first part of a conversation that I had a few weeks ago with Bill Jolly. Bill has been President and Executive Officer of Blind Citizens Australia and is well known for his work on various committees regarding Braille and also the education of blind people, both in Australia and internationally. Bill, welcome back.
Thanks, Vaughan. It's good to be with you and with your listeners as well.
Now, last time we talked, about the fact that you'd been over to the US and you've been travelling again. You went last year for a family event and took the opportunity to do a side trip. Do you want to tell us about that?
Yes, that was last November, Vaughan, and it was all pretty exciting. We went to South Korea where our youngest daughter was married. But on the way over, we went to Japan for a week and had a very interesting visit there.
You went to a blind school, I understand.
Yes, we did. There was a open day at the School for the Blind in Tokyo, and we went there just to visit and learn more about the school. They had a very interesting museum there, and they had some of the students, the older students, who were running the cafeteria. So they made the drinks and they made the cakes and biscuits that we had as well. So the school is quite a big school. I've forgotten the details now, how many students were there and all that, but they have a number of streams for a vocational stream, an academic stream, a stream for children with more serious disabilities, including these days autism. And there's a lot more children that have a vision impairment and have autism as well, as a dual disability. In Japan, there are quite a lot of schools for the blind, special schools, and the practice of mainstreaming or integration of blind children into regular schools is less common than it is in countries like Australia, United States, and others.
Do you know whether there's a reason for that?
Well, I suspect that it has to do with the reading and writing system in Japan being a character-based system, and that's simply more difficult for blind students to understand. And of course, they alternatively use Braille, but in a sense, Braille is very different from the printed system. It's a phonetic-based system.
Right.
So I suspect it has to do with the difference in the printed world, and it's just been the way that they've done it, and they've had enough students to have the critical mass so that the schools have been a good learning and developmental environment for their students. Special schools are still common in parts of Asia, Thailand and China, and the advantage of them is that the students that go there tend to get a very good education, but not so much in Japan, but in the other countries that are more rural based, China, Vietnam, Thailand. A lot of students that get very limited opportunity for education if they're not able to go to the schools for the blind because the support services don't exist in the mainstream education system. Although the ICEVI, the International Council on Education for Children with Vision Impairment, their education for all project has certainly been making a difference towards getting more mainstream teachers trained so that ministries of education can develop a visiting teacher service and support children in mainstream schools.
Mm.
So there's a much more mix of approaches there than we find in Australia.
Did you get a sense of what the employment prospects and the future is like for blind students who are coming out of school?
I got the sense that it was pretty comparable with what we face. Unemployment is higher, but there are people that are engaged in a range of occupations, some in radio, some in the IT field, some as lawyers, some also in administrative roles, and then, of course, in relation to the schools, some in teaching positions as well. However, the mainstay in places like countries like Japan, China, Thailand, Vietnam, Philippines is massage.
Mm.
And so there would have been thousands of blind people in Japan employed as masseurs. And it was a protected position for blind people until the Americans changed the constitution in 1948 after the Second World War. And at that time, massage lost its special place as a protected employment form of employment for blind people. Nonetheless, it remains a very common form of employment, as it does in the other countries that I mentioned. And every 2 years, under the auspices of the World Blind Union Asia Pacific and the Massage Commission of the WBAP, there is a massage seminar or congress, you might call it, that brings together a couple of hundred massage specialists, probably sort of the leaders in their field, to come together. They present papers, have workshops, and it's a very enriching experience for those people. And the next one will be in the Philippines next May. And there are some people that work in massage in Australia, and it would be good to encourage some of those people, if they can afford it, to go along and participate at one of these events.
I would imagine that in Japan, the technology for blind people is fairly comparable with what we have. But did you get any sense of what the students were using at the schools?
I think it would be pretty much the same as what we would have for our students who are going through school. Braille, of course, being the bedrock of literacy, but also computers and synthetic speech were well in evidence. But that would be the same for the school for the blind in Thailand as well, I would think.
Right.
Braille is the basic thing, but they are well up with technology. Of course, the challenge is that things like Braille displays are very expensive.
Mm.
But nonetheless, some students do have access to computer technology and to iPhones, and are certainly making very good use of it. One of the other things that was very interesting is some good progress is being made with audio description in countries like Philippines and Thailand. And the Philippines have a law that mandates captioning and audio description. And similarly, they've made very good progress in Thailand. And there's a great article in the current edition of East Wind number 20, which is the newsletter of the WBU Asia Pacific region, that talks about audio description in Thailand for television and cinema as well.
Yes, we've been talking about audio description quite a lot over the last few months, and we made a point some weeks ago of how embarrassing it is that so many countries in the world have audio description, and Australia is basically being left in the dust. Now, Bill, last time we spoke, you said that you wouldn't be attending the World Blind Union General Congress last year. However, for one reason or another, you did, and got yourself involved in one of their committees.
Yes. It turned out that I was a late call up to the Australian delegation, and I was appointed there by the WBU Asia Pacific region as one of the three representatives from the region to the World Blind Union Executive, and that executive will meet next year, 2018, in Canada. But the significant work is that makes me also a member of the WBU Asia Pacific Board, and that board meets each year to carry out the work of the World Blind Union at the regional level. And we had our meeting just 2 weeks ago in Bangkok, and that was a good meeting, the first meeting of this period, chaired by Michiko Tabata from Japan. And we considered the strategic plan of the World Blind Union and how we would form or shape our activities to be compatible with that. At the World Blind Union, there are issues that are sort of very global in terms of development and welfare, such as the Sustainable Development Goals, which are quite general, and there was a lot of work a couple of years ago for these to involve or relate to people with disabilities. The previous Millennium Development Goals didn't make any mention of disability or a number of the other marginalised groups in society. And the argument went that people put was, well, if you don't include us specifically in the goals and targets, then we're not going to get counted in the achievements and thought about in the projects. So there was a lot of, Marianne Diamond was involved with a lot of that advocacy through the International Disability Alliance, and they were pretty successful really in getting the profile of disability raised with these Sustainable Development Goals. Mm. And now the work is to oversee the implementation of those. But as I say, that is a very general thing. Then a bit more specifically, there is the United Nations Convention on the Rights of People with Disabilities. And that convention has been passed or signed by many countries and ratified now by well over 100 countries, including Australia. And the work there is to for more countries still to ratify the convention, and for us as people with disabilities in the disability movement at our national level to work for the improved services, facilities, access to the community that's consistent with that convention. Then we narrow down a bit further, and there is the Marrakesh Treaty, which is the treaty that facilitates the international exchange of Braille and audio books. And this is relates to blind, vision impaired and people with print disabilities. And the work for the World Blind Union there is to lobby governments to ratify that treaty and then to work with the organisations, which in this case would be the non-government organisations, sort of at a grassroots level to implement the treaty. Now, so far, 25 countries, I think it is, have ratified the Marrakesh Treaty, five of them in the Asia-Pacific region, including Australia. We've had that treaty for 3 years, 25 ratifications. We'd like to have another 25, really, by the end of this year. The momentum's gathering. The World Blind Union looks at, to support its members in some of these global activities, but also to support its member organisations through capacity building so that they become stronger organisations and with more capacity then to advocate for better access to services, facilities and the community that, that we need as people who are blind or vision impaired, but also as stronger organisations to provide the rehabilitation training services that we know so well. And there are a number of networks and committees that the World Blind Union has, and the women's network, the meeting last week has invited Dr. Teresa Smith-Rugg to represent the region on the global committee, and also to establish a network for women in the East Asia Pacific region. And Teresa Smith-Rugg was one of the people that was involved in Leadership 2000, an initiative of BCA back in the run-up to the General Assembly in 2000. And she was a member of the board of BCA for a time and a delegate to WBU in 2004. And for much of the last 10 years, as well as having three children, she has been a member of the board of Vision Australia. So I think she'll be a very good good appointment.
And we'll hear the continuation of my talk with Bill next week. Blind Citizens Australia, as always, can be contacted by email on bca@bca.org.au or by telephone 1-800-033-660. If you'd like to donate, there are plenty of ways to do so. Have a look at the BCA website or get in touch with the office. I'm Vaughan Bennison. Thanks for your company in this edition of New Horizons. I'll talk to you again next week.